Welcome to the Bone Coach Show, dedicated to helping you understand all things related to diet, lifestyle, bone health, and how you can live and thrive with low bone density and osteoporosis. I'm your host, Kevin Ellis, certified health coach, health and wellness speaker, and above all else, your bone coach. After being diagnosed with osteoporosis in my early 30s, I transformed my health through diet and lifestyle and now help my clients and community members do the same through my online coaching practice, BoneCoach.com. Look, there are no quick and easy cures for low bone density, but the choices we make every single day can have a powerful impact on our bones, our health, and our general well-being. I'll share the research, interview the experts, and help you figure out how to get the conditions right in your body so you can better your bones through diet and lifestyle. Short disclaimer, I'm not a medical doctor, and this show should not be considered medical advice. Always consult with your healthcare team before making medical decisions and changes to your diet and lifestyle. With that being said, let's get on with the show.
I was prescribed, and like most people are prescribed, they're given a prescription drug that will reduce the symptoms of it, of each of those diseases. And then I was given basically offhand comments about, oh, maybe you should exercise more, you know, for hypertension, avoid salt, don't eat a lot of purines or certain types of compounds like that. But really the main emphasis was on the treatment with these prescription drugs. And what I found as I began reading more and more is that the drugs I was given really just treated the symptoms for the disease. In other words, the anti-hypertension or the high blood pressure medicines lowered my blood pressure, but they didn't do anything about the underlying pathology in the vessels.
If you haven't done so already, especially if you're newly diagnosed with osteopenia or osteoporosis, or if your most recent bone density scan still showed more bone loss, go ahead and pause this episode and head over to bonecoach.com to sign up for your free 7-day osteoporosis kickstart guide. That's going to give you everything you need step by step by step over the next 7 days to get on the path to improvement and stronger bones. You won't want to miss that. So pause this right now, head over to bonecoach.com, and I'll be here as soon as you get back. Welcome, welcome to this episode of the Bone Coach Show. Joining us today to explore metabolic health, our bone health, and lies he taught in medical school is Dr. Rob Lufkin. In addition to being a practicing physician, he is author of over 200 peer-reviewed scientific papers and 14 books that are available in 6 languages. Robert has given and invited lectures, keynotes around the world, and was named one of the 100 most creative people in Los Angeles by Buzz Magazine. His latest book, Lies I Taught in Medical School, is coming out in June 2024. You will want to grab a copy of this book. His honors include serving as president of the Society of Magnetic Resonance Imaging, president of the American Society of Head and Neck Radiology, and numerous other professional affiliations. Among his many inventions, including several patents in artificial intelligence, he developed an MR-compatible biopsy needle, which is used worldwide today as the Lufkin needle. Robert studied computer science at Brown University and completed his medical degree at the University of Virginia School of Medicine. He is currently adjunct clinical professor of radiology at the USC Keck School of Medicine with an academic focus on the applied science of longevity. He is also chief of metabolic imaging at a large medical network in Southern California. Dr. Robert Lufkin, welcome to the show.
Hey, Kevin, it's so great to be here. I want to say, first of all, I'm a huge fan of yours, both of yours and as well as the podcast, your podcast. And I'm thrilled to be on it. This is the first time. So I can't wait. This is going to be fun.
I'm excited for it, too. And this is going to be a great interview. You've got a fantastic book that's on the way out. And I'm looking forward for everybody. You'll be able to find that book in the show notes, too. We'll make sure we link down to it. But let's jump into the interview and talk about that is a pretty thought-provoking title, Lies I Taught in Medical School. And I'm sure that really draws people in. Maybe you could start by telling us a little bit about your journey in medicine from your education to becoming a fully tenured professor and a leader in medical organizations.
Yeah, and before I do that, just the whole concept of Lies I Taught in Medical School, it is sort of an audacious title. It's sort of clickbait a little bit for people who aren't aware, but the very nature of medical education, and several great scholars in medical education have made the point that 50% of what we teach and what we learn in medical school will be dead wrong within 5 years. And the problem is we don't know which half it is. So yes, I did teach lies in medical school, and they're still being taught by myself and others. And the idea is that science is continually evolving, and we need to continually re-examine things. So for my journey, I started off, my mom was a dietitian. So I was immersed in what to eat. Kind of, we followed religiously. We followed the food pyramid, and we assiduously avoided saturated fat and butter and cholesterol. We substituted margarine full of trans fats and seed oils for butter. We avoided fats, like saturated fats. We avoided eggs, and that's how I lived my life. I got interested in medicine through this experience, and I went to medical school. Was fortunate enough to stay on and faculty, and basically I spent my career at major teaching hospitals in Southern California, and I'm still there. The great thing about being at a teaching hospital is I was able to spend like a third of my time doing research and a third of my time practicing medicine. So I actually got to see patients and actually walk the walk. And then the last third was perhaps the most valuable for me, as I got to teach residents and doctors in training and other healthcare professionals. But it wasn't just teaching them. It was what they taught me by the questions they asked. And I oftentimes learn more, I think, than I taught them from the whole experience. But that's kind of my beginning story, how I got involved in medicine and wound up as a professor at these medical schools.
And maybe you could tell us about your own health journey too. Was there anything along the way in your own health that you realized there needed to be some changes, or maybe you needed to do things differently, or maybe you just wanted to investigate it so you could live longer and better?
Great question. Well, I am a medical school professor, so I was doing everything I thought was healthy for myself and for my family. And then suddenly I developed four seemingly unrelated chronic diseases. And these diseases, as it turns out, were similar diseases that my father had gotten, but my father eventually died of one of them, but he was almost 90 years old when he died. And when I came down with these diseases, I still had two daughters in elementary school. And knowing what I know about those diseases and medicine, this wasn't going to end well. So I went to my doctors and was prescribed prescription medicines for each of these conditions, which I thought would, you know, which I assumed would take care of them. And I followed their instructions diligently. The diseases were hypertension, which almost half of adult Americans have, pre-diabetes, which means my blood sugars were high and I was trending towards type 2 diabetes. I had a lipid abnormality in my blood, abnormals there. And then I had a bone problem with gout, or a type of arthritis where my joints hurt. And as a result of coming down with all those, I began to question the conventional wisdom. And I began reading and looking at research and kind of going outside my own field and talking to people. And I suddenly realized that maybe the approach that had been recommended to me by conventional medicine wasn't the best approach.
And that approach was that prescription drugs, you know, for the treatment of chronic diseases. And, you know, what did you find in your own research and personal experience that kind of helped lead your teaching today, and maybe even you as a medical professional?
Yeah, for each of these diseases, like I was prescribed, and like most people are prescribed, they're given a prescription drug that will reduce the symptoms of it, of each of those diseases. And then I was given basically offhand comments about, maybe you should exercise more, you know, for hypertension, avoid salt, for gout, you know, don't eat a lot of purines or certain types of compounds like that. But really the main emphasis was on the treatment with these prescription drugs. And what I found as I began reading more and more is that The drugs I was given really just treated the symptoms for the disease. In other words, the anti-hypertension or the high blood pressure medicines lowered my blood pressure, but they didn't do anything about the underlying pathology in the vessels. Similarly with the gout, the drugs I was given for that changed the bone so that I didn't have pain in the joints, but they didn't affect the underlying disease process. And same with all the others. And what I realized is, rather than being four separate diseases, these chronic diseases were linked at a very fundamental level to our metabolism. And this has been overlooked. I had overlooked it. And still, many of my colleagues today overlook this in the teaching of medical school, even as of 2023. So I began to look at ways to change the metabolism and address these conditions. And as it turns out, by changing our lifestyle, it's possible to change our metabolism and affect not only these four chronic diseases, but lo and behold, a whole list of diseases. In fact, the major diseases that determine our longevity, things like cancer, heart attack, stroke, Alzheimer's disease, even mental health, have a very strong dependency on these basic metabolic conditions. And the challenge here is there's no pill for metabolism to make our metabolism better. It's about lifestyle. And fortunately, by changing our lifestyle, we can dramatically rework our metabolism to literally prevent or even reverse many of these chronic diseases.
And if that's the key, why is there not as much of an emphasis on that in the medical profession, in that conventional medical model?
Well, part of it is there's a lot of inertia in medicine. In other words, things change slowly. Part of it is modern medicine is very specialized. There are silos. In other words, the endocrinologist who may know about diabetes may not be familiar with Alzheimer's disease, although we're learning that Alzheimer's disease is linked to glucose metabolism, and some people now call it type 3 diabetes. The cardiovascular specialist who looks at the heart and the blood vessels of the heart may not be familiar with insulin metabolism and other things. And the rheumatologist, the bone specialist who looks at the gout, may not be familiar with the metabolic nutritional aspects of it. So part of it is just the information isn't getting out as it should. But this is really revolutionary. It's a game changer, and it can literally save people's lives.
And you mentioned eggs and saturated fat and a couple other things, you know, that you learned following that food pyramid growing up. And so many of our listeners, I'm sure, are like, okay, I heard that too. I still hear that today. Are there examples of dietary guidelines that are still present today that you believe are maybe harmful? Are there any of those that you maybe think?
Yeah, absolutely. Eggs are one of the healthiest foods we can eat. But I was just at a restaurant with my young daughter, and she says, "Daddy, why are there omelets? Why are there egg white omelets?" And I said, "Well, people used to believe that the yolk in the egg, which contained all the cholesterol, that the cholesterol was somehow harmful. Fortunately, that is not true, and it's accepted even by the American Heart Association. Yet many people and some physicians don't still recognize that, and they advise people to limit their cholesterol intake when we know dietary cholesterol has no impact on blood cholesterol. So that's one factor. The other factor is the common diet and the basis of the food pyramid, which was the public health recommendations in the United States and really around the world for the last 50 years, are based on the idea that saturated fats are harmful and that a low-fat diet is healthy. And this has fostered a whole revolution in processed junk foods, which contain high carbohydrates, high seed oils, and a lot of pro-inflammatory grains. And our diets have shifted to this carbohydrate-heavy junk food, which, in my opinion, drives the all the chronic diseases we're facing, starting with obesity, type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, stroke, cancer, Alzheimer's disease, et cetera, including the four diseases I had.
Yeah. And I mean, special interests obviously seem like they have an influence on health guidelines. How do you think this is affecting medical research and the trustworthiness of scientific studies?
Well, yeah, it's a problem. I think basically humans, physicians, and healthcare workers were honest and have good intentions. Nobody wants to hurt anybody and, you know, give the wrong advice, but there are pernicious financial incentives that drive this. The whole idea of one of the best-selling pharmaceutical drugs ever made is a class of drugs called statins, which lower LDL cholesterol. And LDL cholesterol is one of the things that was targeted for reducing heart disease. And heart disease is the number one killer. So the problem is the LDL cholesterol that the statins take care of isn't the main driver of heart disease, although it's the main drug that can be prescribed. So there's this incentive for doctors to prescribe statins because it's something they can do. It's something they can affect to help manage the heart disease. When patients go in, they want pills. They demand pills. They don't want advice about what to eat or, you know, changing their lifestyle, partly because it's confusing, partly because they don't realize how significant it is and how it's probably even more powerful than the drugs they're getting, but also the fact that the doctors don't have time in the modern healthcare system to fully explain lifestyle changes. It's much easier to write a quick prescription for a pill.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. Even from the people that we work with that come to us and tell us that's really their experience too, that they've had with some of those conversations with their physicians. If we're talking about having healthy metabolic function, where does a person start, right? Are there specific tests we need to be looking at? Are there specific areas or regions of the body that we're supposed to be looking at to really focus on improving those areas? I mean, maybe walk us through that a little bit.
Absolutely. But if I could back up one more thing about pernicious incentives. Type 2 diabetes is it's a worldwide epidemic that we've never seen this many people or even this percentage of people in the history of the world. And type 2 diabetes is a problem. It's driven by insulin resistance, but the problem is it leads to heart disease. It leads to Alzheimer's disease. It leads to higher risk of cancer. And if you go, type 2 diabetes is caused by carbohydrate toxicity, eating too many carbs. If you lower the amount of carbs or even cut out carbs entirely in your diet, for most people, the type 2 diabetes will reverse and you will go off all medications. Now, if you go to a hospital and ask the hospital administrator or the owners of the hospital, I say, hey, we have a plan to get, you know, your patients off, cure their type 2 diabetes or put it into remission, you know, that's great news, but it's going to involve a diet. They're not set up for diets. It's easier to prescribe insulin or metformin. But then there are other things in the back of their mind. One of the number one surgical indications is amputations that keep the ORs full. And the number one cause of amputations today is diabetes. Renal failure and dialysis units generate money for the hospital. The number one cause of renal failure today and source of dialysis and renal transplants is type 2 diabetes. In fact, the largest dialysis makers are heavy funders of the American Diabetes Association, which recommends eating foods that contain a lot of sugars rather than eliminating sugars completely from their diet. So there are these incentives. The number one cause of blindness is diabetes, a retinal disease. So it's tricky. They're both conscious and unconscious pernicious disincentives about moving in what I believe is the right direction as far as lifestyle.
Yeah. And that's incredibly frustrating for that end person who's just trying to get well. They're coming, they're putting their faith into a system that is really not designed to help them achieve their best possible health outcome. And that's why sometimes people have to go outside of the conventional medical model and seek out, you know, more functional medicine approaches, getting to the root cause of issues and really acknowledging diet, lifestyle, exercise, all those other pieces play a major role in your health.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and another thing that I became aware of that I wasn't aware of before was, I used to think of diabetes, you know, it's a disease, obviously, and that, you know, some people get it, some people don't get it, you know, and, you know, if you're lucky, you don't get it. And if you're unlucky, you do get it. My thinking's changed on that a little bit. Diabetes is, it's measured by the diagnostic criteria is your blood glucose levels, or your fasting glucose levels, or another marker called hemoglobin HA1C, which is similar to that. And when you cross a certain threshold, you become diabetic. Your diagnosis, oh, you're a diabetic now. And if you're below the threshold, you're not a diabetic. And that's just the nature of medicine. We have to have an on and off switch, really, for insurance purposes and diagnostic purposes. But the reality is the blood glucose begins to be abnormal years to even decades before you actually become diagnosed as a diabetic. And it's interesting, if you look at the adult population of non-diabetics in the United States from large studies, the markers for diabetes or the markers for prediabetes increase with age. So in other words, the older we get, the more of this, what's called insulin resistance we develop, and the more elevated our glucose becomes, so that now my thinking about type 2 diabetes, it's sort of like, you know, gray hair. If you live long enough and you don't die of something first, you will become type 2 diabetic. It's one of those things that you get. So how does that influence my thinking now? Well, most people, you know, arguably all people, but at least most people should think about that with their dietary choices, even though, hey, I'm not diabetic, I'm not diagnosed with diabetes, but I'm on the path there, as we all are. So we might want to think about doing some of the things that make us more metabolically healthy and more and less vulnerable to type 2 diabetes, which is kind of the number one metabolic disease that we face. So you asked about kinds of things we can do in lifestyle. The number one thing you can do with lifestyle is nutrition. And that's the biggest mover on the needle. It's probably the one medicine that everybody on the face of the earth since the beginning of time takes every single day, unless they're fasting or something. So it's something that we get to choose every day when we wake up. We get to make a choice about what we put in our mouth. So my plan, what I began doing to fight these four diseases instead of just relying on the prescriptions, I looked at the factors that what nutrition would do. And one thing I started with, I didn't change anything I ate at all, but I just did the simple thing of narrowing the eating window. So instead of eating all day long, waking up, eating, then snacking, then eating and having dinner, snacking some more, just narrow the window. That in itself will make people more metabolically healthy. Just don't eat all the time. and it turns down inflammation and it improves insulin sensitivity. The next thing I did was I looked at the number one driver for insulin resistance and type 2 diabetes, and that's insulin. It's a hormone we all have. It's life-saving. It causes us to store fat. Of the three macronutrients that we all eat, you know, protein, fat, and carbohydrates, two are essential and one is non-essential. And only one of them really significantly drives insulin. And that's the non-essential one. That's the carbohydrates. So the first thing I did was I minimized carbohydrates in my diet, and I just focused on fats and proteins and went to what's called a low carb diet. I went into ketosis, which is a healthy nutritional state. I narrowed my eating window to one meal a day. When my kids get home, I have dinner with them typically. And then the other thing I did, I reduced another inflammatory compound that's present in almost all junk foods that was just developed in the last century. And these are industrial seed oils. They have very healthy sounding names like vegetable oil or canola oil, or there are a number of those. I removed those are pro-inflammatory. And then The last thing I did was I removed grains from my diet. Now, I love baked goods. I love cake. I love donuts. I love bagels. All that stuff, I love it. But there's one thing I love more, and those are my kids. And I want to see my kids grow up. I want to see their grandkids. And I want to see their my great-grandkids, you know. So I give up grains. And I'm not gluten sensitive. I don't have celiac disease, which some people have problems with grains. But I believe, and there's good evidence to show that all grains have an inflammatory component to them, the proteins in them, and they drive low-grade inflammation that certainly affects me, but it affects many people and can cause problems. So even whole grains, I don't use. And then the final nail in the coffin with grains is, of course, in the United States, grains are soaked in an herbicide called glyphosate, which has been linked to cancer, and many countries outlawed, but not the United States. But so those were the three nutritional things that I did. And then I did other things with sleep, exercise, and stress as well.
Yeah, those diet, nutrition, stress, sleep, those are all major, major drivers. Thanks for sharing your personal journey there as well. It's always good to hear how somebody went from having certain conditions and diseases and how they actually reversed that process and what it takes to get to that point, which is really, really helpful. And I know also from a bone health perspective, you know, our audience has a lot of people with osteopenia, osteoporosis that are focused on building stronger bones. And when they think about nutrition too, one of the most important components they're focused on is, or that we need to focus on, is protein. And a lot of people just don't get enough protein in their daily diets too. So what are some of your favorite sources of protein that you like to incorporate?
Well, first of all, there's arguably too much politics in our world today, you know, in our political system. And I don't talk politics, but even in nutrition, there's a weird politics about vegans versus carnivores. Vegans, of course, are people who only eat plants, and carnivores are sort of the other extreme that only eat animals. And I love vegans. I love carnivores. I was a vegan for 10 years myself, and I've dabbled in carnivore. I support both groups of people and everybody in the middle. I think you can live healthy anywhere on that dietary spectrum. You can also live unhealthily on that. The key thing is to avoid the junk foods. And there's a lot of junk vegan foods out there. And there's also junk carnivore foods, although it's harder to get junk foods in a meat diet, but you can still find them. So either one of those diets, I think can be healthy. And so I follow, you know, both of those depending on the situation.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, everybody's obviously biochemically, genetically unique individuals. You're going to respond to different foods and supplements and dietary approaches differently. And a lot of people, if you're finding yourself in the middle, like, where do I go? Maybe the middle is the right place for you, right? Maybe it doesn't have to be on the extreme ends of those spectrums, that's just fine. Too. And I'd love to understand, maybe from a lab perspective, or even from, are there any specific tests that you like to look at, or biomarkers that you like to look at to evaluate someone's overall health, or maybe the future trajectory of their health?
Yeah. And well, first of all, metabolic disease, scientist Gerald Revin from Stanford University, who's passed away now, but he described a syndrome called Syndrome X, or eventually it was metabolic syndrome, which he later acknowledged that it was basically insulin resistance. But there are markers of this syndrome, which are hypertension, increased blood pressure, which I said half the people have, increased abdominal girth. That's basically just the measurement of your abdomen right around your belly button, sort of. And there are different measurements for men and women there. But sadly, you know, most people in the United States, most adults are overweight or obese. You know, it's just the nature of the thing. So that's another factor. And then there's factors, abnormal glucose metabolism, elevated glucose, and then also elevation of certain fats like triglycerides and lowering of good fats, like blood fats, like HDL cholesterol. And those are some of the markers for this metabolic syndrome. Other blood tests I look at, I think we're, you know, despite what happened with Elizabeth Holmes and Theranos a few years ago in the Bay Area with, you know, the idea of a finger stick with all sorts of blood tests. Well, actually, I guess she's in prison now, but there are now companies that are doing what she had aspired to and promised to do. The technology's changing. There's one company I use has 22 blood markers from a single finger stick that you can do from home. There's another one that has like 500 markers, but the types of things that I can test with this one blood test with a couple drops of blood, I do all my fats, my triglycerides, my HDLs, they mentioned fasting glucose, fasting insulin, hemoglobin, HA1C, those diabetes markers. It also looks at hormones, testosterone, looks at estradiol for women. It looks at fasting cortisol. It's really amazing now. And I think these are going to be more and more widely available. I mean, you can get them through the mail now and just mail them in practically in any state yourself. You don't even need a doctor's help. It looks at also vitamin D levels, which will be important for bone health, homocysteine levels as well. So that's what I do. I do that about once a month just because I'm sort of a geek or a hacker, and I like to know what's going on under the hood, and I'm constantly changing things. So, you know, probably too much so that I could never really be sure of what the results are, but I like to keep an eye on things, and it's fun looking.
Is there anything in the medical field or even the, you know, longevity space or anything like that, that has you excited about the future that you're like, I see this coming. I can't wait for it to happen.
Yeah. I mean, all of this revolution about these chronic diseases, all being driven by underlying inflammatory metabolic markers that can be addressed with longevity. I mean, can be addressed with lifestyle and the choices we make every single day, that the drugs really aren't the solution, but it's the lifestyle effects. Not that we shouldn't take the drugs. If we get prescribed a drug by our physician, we should take it. But if you do your lifestyle right, you may be able to get off those drugs. It's something called deprescription, which is what happened to me. But the things that I'm really excited about is if we take all these chronic diseases and we change our lifestyle, these chronic diseases are, guess what? These are the diseases that statistically you and I and every one of our listeners, or at least the majority of them, will die of. You can look at the causes of death, really what determines our longevity, and they are, number one, cardiovascular disease, heart attack and stroke, two, cancer, and then down the list, Alzheimer's disease, and a few others. And the interesting thing is these lifestyle changes, these metabolic improvements reduce our risk of all those diseases of longevity. So guess what happens? Our lifespans increase, and we're undergoing a amazing revolution in longevity and basically the ability not to just live longer, but to live healthier longer. I mean, nobody wants to live 10 extra years in a nursing home, right? But these are 10 extra years where you're doing push-ups and running with your kids and having fun. So, or your grandkids or your great grandkids. So that's the thing that's really got me excited. And these lifestyle things. And then now research is just in the last 5 years, pushing back even more things we can look towards with longevity, things like drugs like rapamycin or metformin for longevity, or acarbose. We're looking at stem cells and exosomes. We're looking at partial epigenetic reprogramming, where we reprogram our epigenome to control the expression of our genes. So we're born with genes, we're stuck with them, but through our lifestyle and other techniques, we can reprogram the expression of the genes so we can literally change our future by the lifestyle choices we make today. It's so exciting. I can't believe it. This is the best time to be alive.
I love this, and I love your passion. I can definitely sense that coming through as well. And I love what you said earlier. You said that when you were talking about some of the lifestyle, you know, things that you had in the past, that you loved those things, but you loved your kids and your grandkids more. Or what you just mentioned there, which is maybe the last 10, 20 years of your life, are not you sitting in a wheelchair or looking out the window watching life pass you by. It's you're actually up, active, playing with those kids, playing with the grandkids, traveling, going on adventures, doing the things you love. The decisions you make today impact that. That is so, so important. So thank you so much for taking the time to share your knowledge and your expertise. Let's actually talk about your book that's coming out in June 2024. I want to make sure we link to that in the show notes. I know you said you've got a chapter of the book maybe we can link to also, which is
sure.
Fantastic.
Free sample chapter download. It's the first chapter. Read it if you like it. Get the book from your library or buy it. If you don't like it, don't buy the book. You'll be able to try it out there. Yeah.
Don't tell anybody.
I hope you like it.
No, it's going to be a phenomenal book. And maybe you could share, just give us an overview of the book. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, well, basically the book encapsulates a lot of the stories that I've told. And kind of to end the story, those four diseases, after changing my lifestyle, like I talked about here and go into more detail in the book, I basically reversed all those four chronic diseases. I went in to see my doctor and they go, what happened? What did you do? You know, you don't need these prescriptions anymore. I'm off. You know, they basically canceled prescriptions. I don't have the diseases anymore, or they are in remission, depending on how you define them. But I have, you know, it has a happy ending. So the book goes through 12 chapters. It talks about lies I taught in medical school. It starts with metabolism, and then it goes through things like obesity, diabetes, hypertension, things like fatty liver disease. And then it talks about cancer, talks about Alzheimer's disease. We even have a chapter on mental health, which is kind of, you know, people don't think of mental health as being related to metabolic disease, but there's strong evidence that it is. And even psychiatric conditions, some of them can be reversed with a ketogenic diet. So we talk about that. And then we end up with longevity and talk about some of these amazing things that are being done. And then finally, I just give some suggestions of what I do and my thoughts there.
That's fantastic. Well, we'll link to that in the show notes. I want to thank you again for your time, Dr. Rob. And for everybody listening, you can find all of the resources, show notes, everything mentioned here today over at bonecoach.com. We'll make sure we link to that in the show notes. And is there any other resources you want to point to in the show notes before we close this out?
Wow. Go to my website if you're interested. We have different resources on there. We talk about the at-home blood test if they want that. That's that information about that's available on it. So it's robertlufkinmd.com is the website.
Perfect. So we'll link to that as well. So for everybody listening, I want to thank you again so much for your time. We'll see you in the next episode. Hope you found this episode of the Bone Coach Show helpful. You can find all the resources, show notes, everything mentioned over at bonecoach.com. If you enjoyed this episode and found it helpful, be sure to share it with someone you love, a friend, family member, even a group of people. And also be sure to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode that can help you improve your bones, your health, and your future. One last reminder, if you haven't done so already, head over to bonecoach.com. for more great resources to help you get on the path to stronger bones and an active future. I'm your Bone Coach, Kevin Ellis. I'll see you in the next episode.